You are listening to the BC Lions Den Podcast, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
CFL fans, welcome to episode 126 of the BC Lions Den.ca podcast, brought to you in part by AngusReed64.com. Visit AngusReed64.com if you're looking for a speaker for your next event and see what former BC Lions player Angus Reed can do for you. Make sure to check out his new book, Thank You Coach, as well on Amazon.ca and Amazon.com for anyone listening in the United States. I'm your host, Brian Warishan, and I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the show, which is, of course, a member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. It's playoff time in the Canadian Football League, and after missing out last year, the BC Lions have found themselves back in the hunt to compete for the Grey Cup. They'll have to go east to do it, starting this Sunday in Hamilton, and we're going to preview the game for you this week with Josh Smith of the Podski Wee Wee podcast and TSN football analyst Farhan Lalji. But first, let's welcome back co-host Mojo Kemp to the show. Mojo, not a great way to end the season with the performance versus the Stampeders last week, but a great night to celebrate Wally Buono, and it was nice to see the fans come out to send him into the playoffs by saying thank you.
Hey, everybody. Hey, Brian. Thanks for downloading the show, folks. Yeah, you know, why is it? I mean, it was a great night as far as Wally was concerned. Not a great night as far as the Lions were concerned, Brian. And I hate to say it, but I called it that this was going to be a letdown game for our guys. And they sure didn't look too good.
Yeah, and Wally referenced that as well. You could tell that Calgary was definitely the hungrier team, and it's just unfortunate that every time the Lions seem to get a big crowd like that, they seem to lay a big egg. So hopefully they can make people take some notice in the playoffs here and show fans that they should come back out next season. But I thought it was a great night. I thought the Lions organization did a really nice job with the tribute to Wally. It was noticeable but understated. I think that's just the way Buono himself would have preferred it. The bobbleheads, the big heads, was made for some great photos on social media. The video messages from former players like Cam Wake and Dave Dickinson and peers like Marv Levy and John Huffnagel really made it a nice tribute for Wally.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of was sitting there thinking as I was watching this going, I bet you Wally it must be making his skin crawl a little bit to see all that stuff. Wally doesn't seem the type of guy that likes that sort of public adoration. And I also found it a little weird that Dave Dickinson and John Huffnagel also, I mean, I understand why they were there, but the fact that they were kicking our ass and then had up on the board in a nice feel-good moment, I mean, maybe you run those guys before the game, maybe right after or something during the game. It's just like, you know, thank you, Wally, is not what I was screaming at the screen when Dave Dickinson was on it.
Yeah, that was a game that I just kind of went into saying to myself, whatever happens tonight, I'm not going to take it as I usually do when the Lions play that way at home. I'm just going to sit back and relax and soak everything in. And I found myself thinking a lot about the time that Wally has been here and all the exciting moments we've had in that stadium with him as our coach. So it was a great time to reflect on his career here. And I thought the Lions did an outstanding job.
Maybe now we can get him on the show.
That's the goal. I've always wanted to have him on, but I've always realized that he puts in enough long hours where I didn't want to ask him to come on a podcast. So, and I also think that now that he's going to be retired, we might get a little more out of him and get a few stories out of him. So, interesting to hear Wally Bono say on to Ed Willis in the province the other day that, you know, it's time for him to go. And he also, he's hoping that David Brayley will sell the team now to local ownership. He says it's time for that to happen as well. So, you know, that's something we've been talking about for the last couple of years on this podcast, and Lions fans have been talking about. We really feel like this team needs local ownership, and Wally seems to agree with that.
Yeah, but, you know, having said that, we can't forget how much David Brayley actually meant to the Lions at one time.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we were in a pretty dark place until David Brayley took over.
Absolutely, and he deserves credit just like Wally Bono and Bob Ackles does. For reviving the franchise. It was pretty much on death's door when David Brayley bought it. So, you know, there's certainly something to be said for that, but I think the time has come and we've seen the crowds dwindling. There needs to be a local owner in the market who's going to connect with the business community, with the fans in this market, and maybe try things a little bit differently. But certainly, you know, not putting down what David Brayley has done for this franchise, but I think most people realize it's probably time for him to pass the torch on to somebody else. As far as the game itself, we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about it because it's not worth talking about and it didn't mean anything for the Lions. Mojo talked last week about the letdown in Saskatchewan after clinching a playoff spot, and against Calgary, you maybe saw a team that knew whatever happened in that game would have no bearing on their fate. Well, the Stampeders had plenty of motivation on their side. There should be no problem with motivation this week, Mojo. At least you would hope so.
No, you wouldn't think as professional athletes that you really need to motivate these guys to play. But I understand human nature. Folks, we all understand human nature. But these guys should be over the top about being back in the playoffs, especially after missing last year. And you got to know how special this is going to be to someone like Travis Lule.
Yeah, a lot of new players on this team that weren't here last year, but still, you know, Wally Bono's last year, you're in the playoffs. The danger in all of this is whether or not the Lions can flip the switch, so to speak, and find their game this week against the Ticats. There's no tomorrow if they lose this one, and we all know the Lions' issues playing on the road this year. Their last visit to Hamilton didn't go very well, and hopefully they'll stay off the Ticats logo before this game. But they'll be facing a Ticats team that has been hit hard by injuries at the worst time and who lost their last three games of the season. Still, the Lions will have to be much better than they have been in the past 2 weeks, and that's easier said than done when you you have a couple stinkers like that.
No doubt. And, you know, you're looking over at a depleted roster, especially in the receiving corps, and you got to wonder if there's going to be some letdown in the secondary, thinking, well, we're not covering Speedy B, and we're not covering Terrence Tolliver this week, so who are these guys anyway? And it's just going to be less tape on the new guys. So, you know, I'm a little, it always seems that whenever we're playing against a depleted receiving core, that receiving core has a great week. Or when the main running back's hurt, the backup guy torches us for 129 yards. So it's almost like, it's almost like you'd want these guys to play against the A squad just so you know that they can't have a letdown coming up to the game.
Yeah, and I think the bigger concern for me is the Lions' record on the road. 2-7 this year. For whatever reason, they haven't been able to find their game on the road consistently at all. So that's the bigger challenge for me. I know the Lions are going out a day early in this one to try and get acclimated to the time change. It's going to be a 10 a.m. start here, Vancouver time. So, you know, that's going to be a challenge for them. They've got to find a way to show up in Hamilton and be ready to play. One area where the Lions have to be better is on offense, where the running game has dried up and Travis Lule has struggled. Those two things go hand in hand, and Wally Bono says the Lions need to be balanced to have success on offense.
No, I think our offense is best when there's balance. You know, it's not run or pass or run. It's, you know, you got to have balance. And, you know, in the second half, we had a little bit more balance. You know, the play action game was better. The, you know, the little swing passes were better. The throws downfield were better. Football is a funny game. You got to stay on the field. You know, if you don't stay on the field, you don't get opportunities. And, you know, in the first half, they took away our running game. Second half, we adjusted a little bit better, and, you know, we were more productive. The game is the same for the quarterbacks as it is for everybody else. And, you know, it's hard in a game where not everybody's on the same page. It was evident again last week. And, you know, hopefully when everybody's more focused and everybody's, you know, understands the severity of the game, it's going to be better. So, you know, the quarterback is a byproduct of himself and the people around him.
Lule's already been announced as a starter for the game, and that should be no surprise to anyone. He's the veteran guy. He's the one with a track record of rising to the occasion in big games, and the team wants to follow him when he's in the huddle. Lule speaks on having a clean slate now that the playoffs are here and that this team has shown it can rise to the occasion in big games this season.
It's a clean slate, frankly. And it just is. Hamilton's lost three in a row, too, and you think they're worried about losing three in a row? No, I mean, it's clean slate. It's playoffs. It's a six-team tournament. We're there. We earned the opportunity to be here. So it's just about how we prepare and play on game day. When we've had our backs against the wall, when the pressure's been on us, is when this team has risen and played its best. And it's do or die time now. So that's what gives us the confidence that going into this game that we have the ability to compete at the level we need to compete to win in the playoffs. They're an energy defense. I think they believe from a team perspective, I think they believe in flying around and hitting as their key things. Obviously, they mix coverages and fronts and do those things that a lot of defenses do. But where they're you know, oftentimes above average is in the way they play together and their physical and fly to the football.
Those clips from BCLions.com. I feel like Lule's correct, Mojo. The Lions have a clean slate here and they have to play 60 minutes of their best football this weekend. I think we'll see a strong game from Travis, who could be making his last playoff run. Now, that said, Jonathan Jennings has been pretty good in relief the last couple of games, so it'll be interesting to see how much leeway Buono will give Lule if things don't go well to start the game.
I think that this is Lule's game. It's got to be Lule's game. I don't want to get to the point where we see Jonathan Jennings come in, Brian, unless it's at the end of the game and they're taking Travis out to save him for the following week. I think we got the tools, but as we know, as Lions fans this year, you need all the tools to show up at the same time and playing the same game for us to win. And that's what we're going to have. I mean, we need a full game from all sides of the ball.
Both Tyrell Sutton and Jeremiah Johnson are getting reps this week as the Lions prepare for Hamilton. And with Chris Rainey still bothered by an ankle injury, it looks like both of them will dress for this game. Sutton was dealing with a sore leg versus the Stamps, so having Johnson on the roster would give them some depth at running back. Johnson looks also to be handling the kickoff return duties, probably splitting them with Anthony Parker as well.
I think this is the last we've probably seen of Chris Rainey as a member of the Lions.
Could be, yeah.
But, you know, Tyrell Sutton and Jeremiah Johnson, it's a pretty good 1-2 punch. I think I'm pretty confident going in with those guys. I think, again, Rainey didn't do much last game. If he was injured, I guess that would be why. But, you know, he just doesn't seem to be the weapon that he once was.
Yeah, that ankle's been bothering him for a couple weeks. I think he was good for most of that game, but I think he re-aggravated sometime in the third quarter, if I remember correctly. I saw him limping off the field, so unfortunate for him and unfortunate for the Lions because he does bring that game-breaking ability, even though he has been struggling lately. We saw that against Edmonton when he broke one at home there in that playoff clinching game. So, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with these running backs, and it'll be interesting to see if they can get them both on the field at the same time because they both kind of give you different looks. Tyrell Sutton, more of a pounding up the middle running back. Jeremiah Johnson is a bit more of a dancer out there. But Tyrell Sutton's a good blocker as well. So if they could throw both of them out there, maybe hand the ball off to Jeremiah Johnson and take advantage of Tyrell Sutton's blocking abilities on a few plays here and there, that could keep the Ticats honest on defense as well. Like the offense, the defense didn't fare well last week. For the second straight week, they once again gave up big chunks of yardage against the run. That's going to be a key this week, as the running game is going to be a big part of the Ticats offense that is missing three all-star caliber receivers. Both John White and Alex Green pose a big challenge for the Lions. I'm not sure if both of them are going to dress. It sounds like Alex Green is going to be the guy to get most of the carries, but the running run defense has to be much better this week.
Well, that's why it's got me a little bit scared, Brian, because we went into Calgary thinking the same thing. They a lot of their receivers, a lot of their top receivers were hurt. We knew it was going to be a running game, yet we couldn't stop the run. Yeah. So that's a little bit concerning.
Yeah, and one thing that may help that is it's been made official now. Solomon Alamimian has been pulled off the six game list. He's been taking first team reps and doing work on special teams as well. And he announced today he will be playing in this game on Sunday. It's been 4 months since Solomon last played a football game. So you'd have to think whatever decision is made is not only going to consider how his wrist feels, but how far he can go in this game, not quite being in game shape probably. But hey, if Solly can go, you want him on the field.
Yeah, how can you not have Solly on the field? I mean, even if he can only play half a game, it's still going to improve our linebacking core, which has played great, Brian, in Solly's absence.
Not just having him on the field, but the way he can direct the defense out there. And I saw him do an interview today when he was asked about the running game and how the lines have struggled lately. And he said, you know, it's just a matter of everybody being in the right gap. And that's what Solly brings when he's playing middle linebacker. He's seen it all out there. So he can tell guys that, you know, they got to shift here, they got to shift there. He can get those guys set and be a big contributor, just being a general out there in addition to a ferocious tackler. So he will be wearing a wrist brace. So we'll see how he can perform out there. But great to see Solly come back. And hopefully he provides a big boost to that defense. For the second consecutive week, the Lions had issues with their special teams as well, and playing on the road in a hostile Tim Hortons field, they're going to have to make sure they get decent field position from their return unit. Chris Rainey's not going to be available. That throws a wrench into things, of course, but cover teams have to be better and prevent Hamilton from starting with good field position themselves.
Yeah, for me personally, I'm less concerned about the return, although, you know, we need that nice starting position as well. But for me, it's all about the cover teams and getting down the field and making big tackles. I don't think breaks a back of a team like giving up a big play on a kickoff or you know, first play of the game and suddenly they're starting on your side of the field.
Yeah, even last week against Calgary, the Lions got that touchdown in the fourth quarter and the game was still within reach, but very next kickoff. Calgary takes it to midfield, so that kind of kills your momentum pretty quick.
Yeah, big time. So we definitely need the cover team to be firing on all cylinders down the field.
For more on the Lions now in this week's Eastern semifinal, let's bring in someone who covers the team on a regular basis and covers the CFL for TSN. It's our pleasure to welcome back to the show Farhan Lalji. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Always, Brian. Looking forward to talking to you.
Farhan, before we get into the lines, you're preparing your new Westminster Hayaks team for the BC High School playoffs that start Friday night at 7:30 p.m. at Mercer Stadium against the Abbotsford Collegiate team. How have those preparations gone, and are you ready to get your defense of your provincial championship underway?
Yeah, it's been a fairly good week of practice, I think. The guys are pretty excited. It's a different kind of team, and we've been living with those expectations, which is certainly a good thing, but I think the guys are excited to get the regular season behind them and get ready for some of these bigger games. And, you know, I don't think we've lived up to our own expectations this year. You know, we've lost a couple of close games, but I think we're building to something pretty good, and I think we're going to see some of that tomorrow night.
Good stuff. The Lions are limping into the playoffs a little bit after back-to-back losses to Saskatchewan and Calgary. How much of that do you think was emotional letdown after first clinching a playoff spot and then having nothing to really play for last week?
Yeah, I think there is some of that there. You know, once they clinched it, it did feel like they took their foot off the gas. And certainly Saskatchewan's never an easy place to play, especially when you're facing a defense that's that good. And then, yeah, there's no question. Calgary had a lot to play for. BC was hoping to play hard, but they were hoping to play hard without showing a lot. And, you know, that obviously didn't work out because they didn't necessarily game plan for the game. They just, you know, they certainly used their roster, but in terms of what you normally see in a game plan, there wasn't a lot of that. So, you know, both Calgary and Saskatchewan were full marks for those wins. But, you know, the Lions go into this without mojo. Like, you don't just give yourself a mulligan when you're a team like BC that is still the fourth seed. And it's not like you're the defending Grey Cup champions. It's not like you're a team that was, you know, they just had a lot of cushion. So they still have to find themselves a little bit. And going to Hamilton, you know, the one saving grace is they're playing a team in a similar situation, a team that just hasn't had a lot of success themselves in the last 3 weeks of the season.
Hey, Farhan, a couple of areas where there's been a little bit of a drop-off lately on the offense has been in the running game and at quarterback. Both Tyrell Sutton and Travis Lule seem to be struggling the last couple of weeks. What are you seeing at those positions, and what do they have to do this week to correct it?
Well, I think more than anything else, as far as the running game is concerned, they need to commit to it. I don't know that the running game itself, I don't know that Tyrell Sutton is necessarily struggling. I mean, they gave him the ball three times in the first half of the last game. You've got to commit to it. And certainly, I think Calgary's defense is very stout against the run, and so is Saskatchewan's. And I guess very early on, BC just said, look, we're not going to try to beat our head up against the wall. But the problem becomes is you have to control first down, and that didn't work for them. And when you can't control first down, now Travis Lule puts himself in real difficult situations because, you know, as much as we love Travis and think he's a good guy and want to believe he's the same guy that he was in 2013 or 2012 or 2011, he hasn't shown us that over a big period of time, right? He showed us flashes of that, and certainly we haven't seen much of that in the last two games. So I think the one thing with Travis is that they need to get him in some high percentage situations so he can develop a rhythm early. So if you can control first down, either by running the ball or even if it's checkdowns or screens or high percentage passes where it's a certain completion and you can at least get to second and six, I think he'll be in a much better situation. But if he's sitting there at second and nine and second and 10, it's going to be a problem for him. So, you know, again, saving grace, you're facing a Hamilton defense that is the worst in the league in terms of defending the run. And you know, certainly BC's isn't much better. I'm sure that in the Hamilton market right now, they're saying the same thing, that, look, just run the ball against BC because they struggle at it. But from BC's perspective, they have to go there. They've got to make Tyrell Sutton a factor, and that'll take the pressure off Travis Lule.
Speaking of Travis Lule, Jonathan Jennings hasn't looked too bad in relief the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. How much of a leash do you think Travis Lule has?
A long one. I think he'd have to struggle badly. I don't think it's just going to be a few series or anything like that. If he finishes the first half, you know, 7 of 20 and, you know, for 56 yards and an interception, they might make a change at halftime. Like, it would have to be bad. I think the coaching staff and the team itself really believes in Travis. And now look, the last couple of times they've been in the playoffs in those two games in Calgary was Travis that came off the bench in relief of Jonathan. I've seen the same thing you guys have. I think Jennings has looked a little better than Travis in the last two games. He hasn't looked unbelievable, but they've probably been a little more effective moving the ball, but different circumstances when you play a guy late and then all of a sudden the defense gets conservative and just wants to keep everything in front of him. It does make it easier for the number two quarterback, but, it's Travis's team right now, barring injury or if Jennings goes in the game, one of two things has happened. Travis is hurt or the ball game is over. If for all intents and purposes, if it's close, I don't think Travis is coming out.
Sounds as though Sutton and Jeremiah Johnson may both get on the roster this week, thanks in part to Chris Rainey's ankle injury. Do you see the Lions using both running backs at all in some sets, perhaps having both on the field at the same time? Or do you think Johnson will just be used in the return game?
Yeah, you know, they haven't. If they couldn't get a lot of Rainey and Johnson on together before, you know, that was such a challenge for them. I don't know that there's going to be a big need to do that. Johnson doesn't necessarily give them a big matchup advantage if you try to put him out into space. You know, could there be some short yardage situations and things like that? It's possible. But I just don't think they've made a big effort to game plan that this week. I think this is Tyrell Sutton's ball to run with as far as the running game is concerned. But Johnson is getting all the reps in the return game, so I think he'll get a chance to get 5 or 6 touches there, and hopefully he can make the most of them.
As you mentioned, the defense has struggled stopping the run over the last couple of weeks. This week in Hamilton, they're likely to get a heavy dose of the ground game. What have you seen as the issue there? Are they simply getting outworked in the trenches, or is it poor tackling?
Well, you know what? I think they need to do a better job on the edges. You know, I think Odell Willis and Sean Lemon have been very good at rushing the passer. I mean, they've slowed down on that in the last couple of games. But, you know, generally they are upfield pass rushers. They don't necessarily get involved in terms of trying to set the edge as far as the run game is concerned. So there are some big gaps, particularly on the weak side, for linebackers to cover, and it's been a struggle for whoever's been in there, including Micah Aue last week, who had some injuries. So I think that was a bit of a problem for them there. And so now we're going to see Solomon Alamivian play for the first time in 4 months, and you know, how is that going to look, right? I think that's a big question. you know, is he going to be sharp? Is he going to be instinctive? Can he feel fast? Is something that I want to see. But, you know, right now their defense is so geared towards rushing the passer in terms of how they want to draw double teams, the way they're trying to twist up front and just do anything to kind of free up pressure. You know, it might force them to try to find different ways to get guys in the box and not just play run defense. Not just try to rush the pass, but to also play run defense by bringing run blitzes, by bringing extra pressures that they could just get more guys and also defend the run, because Alex Green is dangerous. And again, as we said earlier, they're going to be licking their chops to go after BC's run beat, because it really hasn't been great at any point this season. You know, the most success they've had is when teams just abandon it for whatever reason. You know, you play in Edmonton and they're just going to throw the ball no matter what. Your run D is going to look good. Generally, it hasn't. So you're going to see two offenses, or you're going to see two defenses try to test the patience of the opposing offense. Are you patient enough, a la Rich Stubler, are you patient enough to continue to run the ball all game? You know, and I think from BC's perspective, when you're facing the wind, you have to try to shorten the game. You've got to play that NFL 4-minute offense where you are, you know, not snapping until late into the play clock, when you're doing everything you can to slow things down, run the ball, and shorten those two quarters. I think you'll see both teams try that and see which one is more patient, more successful at it.
Farhan, we mentioned Solly. Just to go back to him for a minute, how effective do you think he's going to be able to play a full game? I mean, he hasn't played in 4 months, right? And it's more than just It's more than just him physically on the field, right? I mean, he directs traffic out there. He tells guys where to line up. So that's got to help in the run game.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, right? I think that the biggest thing that Solomon's going to give them is an emotional lift. I don't know that he's going to be a significant player this week. Will he play? Yeah. Will he play a rotation? You know, I could see them rotate both he, Herdman, and Lacombo, and all three of them get a steady diet. And, you know, you might even see some bigger packages with all three in the game if Alex Green starts getting things going. I mean, he affords them that flexibility. But if you think you're going to see 2015, 2016 Solly, you're not going to see that. You're going to see a guy that's rusty. You're going to see a guy that at least initially is a little bit tentative trying to take on blocks. And, you know, a guy that isn't necessarily going to be comfortable going sideline to sideline yet, right? I mean, he's because you're going to have to see what his speed and fitness is, because he just hasn't been, you know, testing it, right? So I've seen him come back from injury before. It usually takes time for him to get comfortable, and he just isn't going to have that time. So he'll be fine. He's not going to be worse than Micah Aue was last week, because Aue was still struggling coming off the knee injury. But if you're looking for an all-star performance, you won't get it. But he might make those around him significantly better with that emotional lift.
Who's going to lose out on the most playing time with Solly coming back?
Probably Herdman. Just because I think, you know, you're going to have Solomon play the Mac, and I think Bo is probably a little more conditioned to play Will. But, you know, what they've been doing is, in the last few games, when Mike Aue's been healthy, is that Aue has gone into the Mac spot, and both of those guys have rotated at the Will spot, Lacombo and Herdman. So, but at the end of the day, I think they're all going to get a lot of playing time, because to go back to your earlier point, I don't know that Solomon is ready yet to take every defensive snap.
I want to get your thoughts on the Ticats quickly, Farhan. Obviously, they've lost three in a row coming into the playoffs. Their receivers have been decimated, but they still have Jeremiah Mazzoli and Luke Tasker and a solid running game. How do you think they can have success against the Lions on offense?
They're going to have to run the football. And, you know, Mike Jones has also emerged for them a little bit. Marquay McDaniel is playoff savvy, but he's still learning this offense. And Jeremiah Masoli is a little bit limited in his mobility, right? I mean, mm-hmm. I know he has something from the previous game, which is part of why he sat out this past game, spent a few reps with a brace on early in this practice week, just didn't like it, so took it off. So you have to believe that he's dealing with something for this game. So I think the smartest thing they can do is lean on Alex Green, lean on the run game, get some play action going to Tasker and Jones. You know, and if BC gets aggressive, take advantage of some man opportunities to make some plays. But look, I like Jeremiah Masoli. You know, he's made me a believer this year, but I don't think he's healthy, and he certainly isn't fully loaded in terms of weapons.
What do you see on their defense? I would think the Ticats will have gone over the game film of the Lions' last two games and seen the issues the Lions have had stopping the run. They do get Delvin Bro back for this one as well. Where's the weakness on this Ticats defense?
Their run defense, right? I mean, it's the worst run defense in the league statistically. And you know, I'm trying to figure out. I know that Bro has got a bit of an injury, but teams have just completely stayed away from him all year, and how can you not? But if he's, you know, I'm curious to see if they try to test him at all to see if, in fact, he is healthy. And then we'll see what we get with Ted Laurent, right? Because he's kind of had some up and down moments this season, right? But he's such a difference maker when he's dialed in along that defense. I think Samori Lawrence has been a lot better this year than he was a year ago. I thought that his best days were behind him. I'm not saying he's playing at an all-star level, but he looks more like 2016 Samori and not 2017 Samori. So, you know, he's still got something there, but their secondary, their pass defense is very, very good. So they're going to make it really challenging. And if you're Jerry Glanville and you can just take Delvin Bro and lock up on one side and then make everybody else play zone and you can get creative on the other side, it certainly makes life easier for a coordinator. But again, even more reason for why BC has to run the football, because they're susceptible there, but they're so good against the pass.
Hey, Parhan, you think we're going to see any videos of Lions dancing on the Ticats logo this week?
No, I don't think so. And you know what? I think the narrative of that could get flipped because, you know, the story wasn't as well publicized because it wasn't videotaped, but there was a lot of talking after the game, outside the locker rooms, on the way to the buses. And, you know, it was the Lions that were pissed off as a result of everything that Hamilton had to say in those moments, right? So if there is any baggage to bring back, it probably comes from BC in terms of fuel. But you know, when you get into playoffs, all that stuff has to go out the window because there's just so much more at stake.
One last question for you, Farhan. With Jason Moss retaining his job in Edmonton, I know you've been a little bit suggesting that Ed Hervey is going to go after Mike Riley. Do you think that changes at all now with Moss staying there?
No, I don't think Ed Hervey is going to be any less aggressive in his pursuit of Mike Riley. I certainly think that Edmonton did the smart thing by bringing back Jason, but also Jordan McSimmick, who is a young up-and-coming guy that's going to get a bigger role as far as a coordinator is concerned. I think that's going to also be something that Mike likes, right? Because he's a fan of Jordan, so they're doing everything they can, you know, and Mike Riley made it clear on his way out the door just how much he thought of Jason. So between that and the fact that he's under contract till 2020, they're able to do what they want. And the fact that if Jason can step away offensively a little bit, you know, that'll appease the masses somewhat. Although I am pleasantly surprised it does not look like Mike Benavides is going to get fired. I thought he was going to be the fall guy in all of this, but I think there's an appetite to retain him. I think they've realized that when the team fell apart in the second half of the season, the offense was the bigger problem. The defense had far fewer warts in it. And when you consider where that team is built in terms of its ratio, you know, Mike has to play more Canadians on the defensive side of the football than any other defensive coordinator in the league. So he did a lot with what he had to work with, and it sounds like they're going to keep him, which is a good thing for one of the better people in this league.
Farhan, I'm sure you got some more prep to do for tomorrow's Hayek football game. So, for those in the area that want to come out and see some BC High School playoff football, I encourage you to do so Friday night, 7:30 p.m. at Mercer Stadium in New Westminster. Always a pleasure, Farhan. Thanks again, and good luck tomorrow, and go Hayeks.
Thanks, Brian, and we will see you at the game with your tablet. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, you bet. All right, let's take a closer look at the Ticats now. And Josh Smith is the co-host of the Podski Wee Wee podcast. He also covers the Ticats for 3downnation.com. Josh, welcome back to the show, and thanks for taking the time tonight.
Anytime, guys. Always a blast to be on Talking Football with you two.
Let's get into it, and we might as well get it out of the way right off the top. The Ticats have been hit hard by injuries down the stretch to very key players. They've lost their last three games. How confident are you that they can flip the switch come Sunday?
Not very. I mean, we've seen this team now four games, I believe, play without Brandon Banks. And we've seen them play four. I mean, it's hard with the last game against Montreal because they didn't really play anyone, but we've seen them now lose those four games, including one against your Lions. I just don't know if this offense, without all that firepower, can get it done. And this is a different BC team that we're going to see with Travis Lule behind center as opposed to Jonathan Jennings in the two matchups these two had earlier this year. I hate being the negative Nelly, but this, I don't know. I'm not brimming with confidence going into this one.
This game screams of a game that's going to be dominated by the run, and the team that does it the best is probably going to win this football game. Who do you see getting the bulk of the carries for the Ticats, Alex Green or John White?
Probably Alex Green. I think he sat out last game because they just sat a bunch of starters. I think throughout the season we've seen that whether Green's been injured or not, whenever he's healthy, he's the guy in there. John White's done a great job filling in for him. I thought he played pretty well last week. He's had a couple of big games. I think he had a pretty big game, if I'm not mistaken, against the Lions in one of those matchups earlier this year. But if Alex Green's healthy, Alex Green is going to be the guy to go.
Do you think there's any chance they put both of them on the roster? Because I know the Lions are going to be dressing both Tyrell Sutton and Jeremiah Johnson this week.
It is something that June Jones has talked about. When Banks went down, they started talking about ways that they could reconfigure the roster. And they did talk about trying to get two American running backs on the game day roster. That's difficult. I know you guys out there have been able to, are able to. Chris Rainey was, you know, he's like a hybrid running back. They were using him a bit. I think Rainey's missing this game, if I'm not mistaken. So I guess that kind of opens up a roster spot. And I know Jeremiah Johnson's done some kickoff returns as well. So I don't know, because I don't think John White plays a lot of special teams. And I think, as we all know, being followers of the league, if you're a backup and you're not playing special teams, really hard to crack that roster if you're not a starter, right? So, I mean, anything's possible. I've seen in the year and a half now that June Jones has been coach here do some things that are kind of unexpected by regular Canadian football standards. So it's possible. I don't see it, but I guess we'll have to wait till Sunday.
Hey, Josh, we've already mentioned Brandon Banks a couple times, but he's not the only receiver gone. Terrence Tolliver's gone, Jalen Saunders. I mean, you got Luke Tasker, and he's always a threat. But, you know, who are the Ticats going to line up at receiver? Are you going to take the field this week?
They don't need me in my 14.4 40-yard dash time, and that's being generous. Mike Jones is a guy that has really stepped up this year. His season, the numbers he put up this year really took me by surprise, over 840 yards receiving. For a Canadian guy that mostly plays that wide side receiver position, you don't see numbers like that. He's a guy that's kind of stepped up. Terrell Sinkfield, I think we're going to see some more out of him. Offensively, we saw a little bit of it in the last two games. I think this is what they brought him in for. Even before Banks got hurt, they brought Terrell Sinkfield in. So I think we're going to see a little bit more of him in the lineup. Marquay McDaniel's taking some reps. Braylon Addison is a kid who last week against Montreal, and I know it was kind of a, you know, pseudo preseason game, put up over 100 yards and had a really nice touchdown catch. So, like, the team does have options in the receiving corps. They're just not the Terrence Tollivers. All those names you mentioned, like Brandon Banks, Jalen Slott, like, those are all-star caliber players, former 1,000-yard receivers. They don't really have anyone like that outside of Sinkfield waiting in the wings. So it's going to be probably, outside of Luke Tasker and maybe focusing on Sinkfield a bit more, kind of a committee approach.
So getting the guys, all these guys, the ball, of course, is Jeremiah Mazzoli. Josh, our spies are telling us that he's wearing a knee brace this week. He's saying it's for precautionary reasons. Is he healthy going into this game?
I think he's as healthy as anyone can be after playing an 18-game season. Everyone at this point of the year is banged up a little bit. If he's saying it's not a big deal, if the coach is saying it's not a big deal, maybe you read into that and go, okay, are they going to tell us anyway? I find, at least since he's been here, June Jones has been pretty honest, almost to a fault. I think if we remember back in the preseason, he had a press conference and said, oh yeah, we're trading one of our quarterbacks, and that gets out, all of a sudden trade the quarterback. Like, June Jones doesn't tend to hide very many things. So I think if this was actually an issue, he would legitimately say, like, yeah, his knee's kind of banged up. So I think with them kind of taking the calm approach here and Jones kind of saying, no, there's nothing to see here, I kind of take him at his word.
Defensively, the Ticats were probably one of the best in the league in the first half, but haven't been as dominant in the second half. They get Delvin Bro back in the lineup this week, and Larry Dean and Don Unamba have become a great tandem at linebacker. What do you see the biggest thing they'll have to deal with against BC?
That receiving core. That receiving core in BC is pretty good, and I think the Ticats have the secondary to slow it down. Devere Posey has started to come into his own, right? And Brian Burnham, for some reason, when he plays the Ticats, he does something spectacular. Last year, we all remember here at Tim Hortons Field, he had that incredible catch that, like, it made no sense how he caught the ball. I think we all remember, Hamilton fans especially, the overtime catches he had, or the catches that forced overtime. The beauty on the two-point convert where there's, like, a blade of grass. Like, Brian Burnham is a darn good receiver, and he's someone the Ticats have to worry about. But if you look at the Ticats' defense, getting Delvin Bro back is huge, because essentially, no matter who you line up against him, I think I read that Posey is going to – they're going to move him around, but he's probably going to be on Bro quite a bit. They kind of get eradicated. Like he is not – like the Ty Cats have used as the Bro-Muta triangle. It's kind of true. Like he – you line up a guy against him, and he goes one-on-one the entire game, and if you get two catches on him, you're lucky. So it's going to be a fun chess match with Travis Lule behind center, who I think we can all agree is a much more – cerebral quarterback than Jonathan Jennings. He's a better quarterback, I think, not mince words. But I don't know. That Ty Cat secondary is pretty good. Hasn't been great the last few weeks. The defense itself hasn't been great. But getting Bro back, I think, is the major thing here, because he just completely alters what that defense can do.
Just want to go back to the offense for 1 second and talk about the offensive line. They're getting their starting tackles, Riker Matthews and Kelvin Palmer, back. The latter who Lions fans are familiar with. What does that group have to do to contend with a fierce Lions pass rush?
They got to be sound. It's funny, on our show back when the Lions and Ty Cats played during the regular season, the one thing that Mike and I kept talking about was how are the Ty Cats going to stop that defensive line? Because Odell Willis, Sean Lemon, Davin Coleman, like that is a – those three – among themselves are dangerous. So if you look at what they did kind of with Lemon, like Coleman had a big first game, kind of quiet the second game. Lemon and Willis didn't really do much. So whatever they did in those weeks, just do that again, because it seemed to work.
Josh, when you look at the Lions from the Ty Cats perspective as a fan, what concerns you the most about the Lions as an opponent?
Terrell Sutton changes that team. Great running back, toiled all those years in Montreal, and now is getting a chance. I want to say he was on the 2014 Owls team that got to the playoffs, but I could be mistaken. But now he gets a chance with BC. He's a tough runner. He wasn't in those two matchups in the, they played in the regular season, and I think he adds a different dimension. It's going to be cold here. I recently looked at the weather just before we recorded this. It's looking to be in the 3 to 4 Celsius range. That's run the ball, pound the ball weather. And I think with Terrell Sutton there, and you're going to get Jeremiah Johnson, those two running backs, I'm a big Jeremiah Johnson fan, but Terrell Sutton and Jeremiah Johnson together, that's great. But I think Terrell Sutton changes that offense and allows them to do so much more.
Ty Cats are asking fans to wear black to this game. They're billing it as the blackout. And, you know, it's going to do nothing except for hide the Ty Cat guys and make the Lions receivers stick out in their road uniforms. What's your feeling on this promo?
I mean, I got to give it to the Cats. Most years they do something kind of fun like this. I'm sure we're going to get into the Ric Flair of it all in a little bit. I like it. I think it's kind of neat to kind of bring everyone. We've seen like whiteouts in stadiums before. I think the Winnipeg Jets are notorious for that. I think it's kind of cool. Like get everyone to kind of show up wearing the same colors. Black's kind of intimidating, I guess. They're going to hand out black rally flags. They're going to hand out black ponchos, or I think they're calling them cloaks or something like that. Like, I don't know. I think something like this to kind of bring everyone together, I think it's neat. I don't think it really means anything for the product on the field. Like, I don't think the Lions are going to look up and see 24,000 people wearing black garbage bags over themselves and go, oh, well, we're intimidated. But I don't know. I think teams like do stuff like this. I think it's fun. I don't read too much into it. I just think it's neat.
You mentioned the Nature Boy, Josh. So let's, for folks that aren't aware of the connection that Ric Flair has with the Ty Cats, how about you refresh everybody's memory?
Well, the biggest one they have. So Ric Flair is going to be at the game on Sunday. Ty Cats put out a big video about it. He's going to lead the Oski Wee Wee cheer ever since Pigskin Pete stepped down just after Labor Day. They brought in ex-players to do this, and I think they wanted something big for the playoff game. So they reached out to one of the biggest professional wrestling stars. Like Ric Flair, I think even just calling him a professional wrestling star, I think is a disservice. Like everyone knows Ric Flair. He's in that celebrity pantheon of your Michael Jordans, your Hulk Hogan's. Like everyone knows Ric Flair. So Angelo Mosca was once a professional wrestler as well. And him and Flair, they teamed up. They worked on some cards together. When this is something I actually wrote for 3Down, I think it was last year, comparing, like looking at the wrestling and CFL connections. Angelo Mosca was actually at Starrcade 83 when Ric Flair beat Harley Race in a steel cage match for the NWA World Heavyweight title. And Mosca's the first one in the cage getting Flair on his shoulder. Like, there's a big picture of, like, Flair standing on Mosca's shoulders holding the belt. So, like, those two guys have had a friendship dating back 30, 40 years now. So that's kind of the connection. Like, Ric Flair is one of those guys. He'll, you know, I'm not sitting here saying Ric Flair is a diehard Ticats fan. Ric Flair is known to kind of be one of these guys he's in his elder years now who will take a paycheck and will pump up a team. And I think that's pretty cool. And for the team to reach out to him and get him to come to the game, I think it's pretty neat. Cause like I said, Ric Flair's that's a pretty big name. So I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool that the stuff with Mosca in the past is kind of cool. Again, just like I said about the blackout thing, it's just, you know, good fun.
You should have invited Joe Capp. It could have been real fun.
they could have done a steel cage match at halftime.
Yeah. Hey, Josh, you posted an article on 3downnation.com ranking the potential Grey Cup matchups based on all the different scenarios that could occur. Very well done, by the way. You had BC versus Calgary as the second best potential matchup, but I think you left out one factor that might have nudged it to number one, and that would be the fact that Wally Buono would be coaching in the Grey Cup in his final game against his old team Calgary. I mean, come on, man. That's the stuff movies are made out of.
No, I agree. If you actually go look at that, I've taken some heat for putting a Ticats matchup at number one. But I think that Winnipeg-Hamilton matchup, you're sitting there in the stands going, one of these teams hasn't won a Grey Cup in a very long time is going to win one. I very nearly put the Calgary-BC matchup at one. Actually, if you look at my top three, it's Winnipeg-BC, Calgary-BC, and Winnipeg-Hamilton. You can mix them up. I think those are the three most intriguing matchups. The Lions, all three of theirs finished in my top five. It is. The idea of Wally Buono finishing his career with a game in the Grey Cup, if the Cats can't get there as a Ticats fan, I'm rooting for the Lions to get there because I want to see – if I can't see my team win, then seeing Wally and, like, Travis Lule, like, seeing those guys get back to the mountaintop, I mean, that's pretty darn cool.
Well, Josh, thanks so much for joining us tonight. I hope we see a great game on Sunday. I think these teams are quite similar, and it should be a good battle. Before we let you go, we'll ask you to fill our listeners in on where they can find your show. And I know you guys did a preview of the game this week as well, so they can go listen to the Ticats' point of view on things as well.
We did. You can find the show, Podski Wee Wee, on all your podcasting apps, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever you can get a podcast, pretty much you can find ours. The show is also posted on 3downnation.com, so you can go there. You can also find me there doing some stuff mostly Ticats related, but every now and then I do dip into other teams and the league in general. And of course, if you're on social media, Twitter, you can find me at @JoshSmith_82. You can find the show at @PodskiWeeWee on Twitter. You can find the show on Instagram at @PodskiWeeWee as well. So feel free to hit us up on the social media stuff and give our show a listen, and maybe I'm hoping, like, just like you guys, for a good game this week. And I will go on the record on your show as saying whoever wins this game is the team that I'm cheering for to win the Grey Cup.
All right, right on, Josh, thanks a lot, and we'll see you soon at Grey Cup.
Yes, thanks for having me on. I can't wait to see you at Grey Cup.
Cheers. Mojo should be a great game this weekend. I think both teams have had similar seasons, the Lions starting slowly and then having a stronger second half. Ticats had a good start then faded as they ran into some injuries.
You know, Brian, this could be a good time to catch the Ticats. They're, as we all know, they're sort of backsliding into the playoffs here. And our guys have got to be fired up. They got to be coming out strong. I'm feeling really good about this game, Brian. I think we're going to take this game.
And maybe they can use that last game in Hamilton as motivation, too, because they got their butts kicked there. And it sounded like there was some extracurricular activities following that game in the parking lot too. So there should be no love lost between these two teams when they kick the ball off on Sunday in Hamilton. A couple Lions notes before we update you on our final CFL pick'em results. Lions have had seven players named to the West All-Star team, and not surprisingly, the majority were on defense. TJ Lee, Devon Coleman, Anthony Orange, Otha Foster all get the nod, as well as Ty Long and Chris Rainey on special teams, and Brian Burnham on offense.
Great list of guys. I was really happy that Otha Foster came over at the start of the season. I've always enjoyed his style of play. You know, Devon Coleman came out of nowhere, Brian, and I didn't know nothing about this guy. And he's had a hell of a season for us. Ty Long, I hope he's going to be around next year. You know he's going to get some looks. But it seems like the kickers, they seem to come back pretty quick. I mean, Richie Leone left us. He came back the following season. So certainly like to see Ty Long around. And like I mentioned, yeah, Chris Rainey can be pretty exciting, but a lot of the time he's just not this year. So good for him for getting the nod, but I think this is the last we're going to see of him.
Yeah. Well, you know, Ty Long, you know, he's definitely going to get some looks down south, and you know, they do end up coming back a lot of times, but this guy's got a great leg, and he's really improved his field goal kicking as well, so that's a pretty valuable option to go down south with. Richie Leone went down there strictly as a punter. But, you know, when they do go down there, we have to find somebody else. And, you know, when Richie Leone got cut this time, we already had Ty Long and he ended up with the Red Blacks. So Lions are going to have to address that either way. But, you know, I'd love to see Long back with the Lions for sure.
He just, you know, Ty Long just needs to work on his sell job a little bit. You know,
I wish he would stop doing that.
He just needs to work on it a little bit more, and he'll be getting those flags.
That was one they actually reviewed because he actually got the call. And I saw him limping off the field. Obviously, not so much. But
yeah, when it didn't look so good on the replay.
Yeah, I talked about that on an earlier podcast. Just stop it. You know, this is not soccer where you're flopping around on the field when somebody brushes your jersey or something like that.
He's a little guy.
Well, you know, it's not football. You know, it's just not football. It bugs me, and I really wish he would stop doing it. But it is what it is, and hopefully he doesn't try that in the Eastern Final. Lions also announced on Wednesday that they have extended defensive lineman Devon Coleman through 2019. Great news, because Coleman has been a big difference on that defensive line this year, especially stopping the run, getting after the quarterback.
Yeah, the guy's had a monster year, and looking forward to seeing what he can do next year. Glad he's back. Glad there's a piece on the defensive line already in place.
The Lions are in Hamilton as we record this show on Thursday night. They left a day early to get adjusted to the time difference and an early 10 a.m. Pacific start time. They'll practice at McMaster's University on Friday. Win or lose, they will charter home immediately after the game. And then if they end up going to Ottawa, they'll fly back out sometime next week. But Mojo, I wanted to get your thoughts on this start time, especially as a veteran yourself. 11 a.m. Pacific will happen right around the latter part of the second quarter. The league has announced that they are going to be stopping the game at 2 p.m. Pacific or 2 p.m. Eastern and 11 a.m. Pacific, so people in BC can properly have a moment of silence for our veterans. To me, this is something that could have been avoided altogether. You know, they could have started the game at noon Pacific time, giving people a chance to get down to the Cenotaph and pay their respects. But you're a veteran. Do you think they could have done better here, or are you satisfied with the moment of silence that they're going
to
have?
No, man. And folks, this, you know, just be ready to turn down if you're at work, because I am a veteran, and thanks for saying that, Brian. This is gonna be pissed off, Brian. Pissed off, because how long have we known there's gonna be a Western team in the East? It's got to be a couple of weeks we've known that now, and like you mentioned, it would not be hard to start this game at noon or at 1 o'clock and have the Western final start at 4 or 5. That's all doable. To have stopped a game for a moment of silence is, while it's nice that we at least got that, what about the folks in Alberta that are watching the game? Right? Are they going to stop the game twice so that people in Alberta can have their 11 o'clock moment of silence as well? Because I'll tell you, Brian, I'm going to miss the start of this game, because a moment of silence in my living room isn't enough for me. I will be going down to New Westminster with the Cenotaph. I'll be watching the veterans who, you know, Brian, some years you get smaller and it makes you sad, and some years it gets bigger. And I think that makes me even sadder, to know that we're still churning out veterans, unfortunately, in this crazy world that we live in. I think that the league could have handled it better. They knew weeks ago that there was going to be a crossover. You know, how long ago did they know that Remembrance Day was going to be the Sunday of games? They just should have started the Eastern Final at 1 o'clock Pacific time period.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's reasons for it. TSN might have a say in their programming on that day, but it's unfortunate, and I think at least at the very least, it's great that the league is giving you know, fans on the West Coast a chance to pay their respects. You know, Susan and I usually go to the Cenotaph in Port Coquitlam here every year, and you know, and I don't think we're going to make it this year because I do want to watch the game from start to finish, and but it doesn't take away my respect for people like you that are veterans and people that have fought in wars for us. You know, obviously they saw this game. Obviously this game was scheduled a long time ago, and you know, somebody should have piped up and said, "Hey, we gotta do something here. This is not a great start time for all Canadians." But thankfully, they're going to do something anyway. So it's unfortunate, but that's just the way it's going to be this weekend. Well, it's time to check in on CFL Pick'em as we enter the final weekend of the season, and we will update our totals here after the last week. My record is 44-33, 8,063 points. Mojo 43-31 for 6,851 points. Mojo, yeah. The crown is mine. If you hadn't missed a couple of picks, you might have got me on record, but I think bragging rights are mine for this season.
Yeah, congratulations to you. It's good to see the crown fits more than one head on this in this room here.
We both have the same size head.
So congratulations to you. And hope everybody had fun this year. You know, I've really enjoyed CFL Pick'em since they started doing it a few years ago. I have less luck, if you can believe that, with the CFL fantasy. I quit. I did too. Halfway through the season, I was like, why am I even trying? I'm cursing everybody I pick. And I'm no good at fantasy. I can say this. I'm man enough to say this to everybody. I'm no good at fantasy football. I'm no good at it because I can't not pick Lions and I can't not pick Cowboys. I just, because I don't know anybody else in the league. I only watch my teams. If Houston's playing San Diego, it's not on TV at my house. I'll find something else to do. I watch the Cowboys. I watched the Lions. Done. I don't know anybody else in the league, and that does not bode well for my football fantasy leagues.
Yeah, back in my younger years, I would know every player and all that kind of stuff, but I'm like you, as you know, I pretty much watch the Seahawks and the Lions, and that's pretty much the extent of my NFL watching on Sundays. But, you know, 44-33, not that great a record as if you look at some of the guys up at the top of the leaderboard, man, I don't know how they do it week after week. But fantasy football, I think I would do a little better if they gave us a little more salary, because it goes pretty quick if you try and get a good quarterback. I mean, it gets to be pretty slim pickings there at the end. So I wish they would increase the salary cap, Randy Ambrosi. We need us fantasy players need more cheddar.
Well, you never know what's going to happen with the CBA this year.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's safe to say that we're both taking the Lions this week. So before we wrap up, who do you like in this Western semi, Mojo, Saskatchewan or Winnipeg?
Well, you know, both the teams been playing great. You got to maybe give the edge to Saskatchewan at home, but I'm not picking the stinking Riders. I'm going with the Blue Bombers, and hope Adam Big Hill gets out there and has a great game. I'm looking for a Calgary Blue Bomber West final.
I am going to agree with you. I think the Bombers are probably the best team heading into the playoffs right now. I think their offense is better than Saskatchewan's. Their defense can hang with them. And, you know, you get Adam McHill in the middle and Andrew Harris on the other side of the ball. And I think that's a recipe for the Bombers to win. Matt Nichols has never won a playoff game, but he'll get his shot this weekend at Mosaic. I am taking the Bombers to I don't know if it's an upset, but they're going to take this game in Regina and move on to face Calgary in the Western Final. That's it for episode 125. Our thanks again to Farhan Lalji of TSN and Josh Smith of Podski WeeWee and 3downnation.com for joining us tonight. I'd like to remind you that this podcast is brought to you in part by AngusReed64.com. If you have an event that you would like to have a speaker at, check out Angus Reed's work on his site and check out his new book, Thank You Coach, on Amazon.ca. Make sure to check out all the great shows in the Canadian Football Podcast Network, because folks, they keep getting better and better, and we're proud to be a part of it. Check out cfpodnetwork.ca and at cfpodnetwork on Twitter to stay up to date with all the latest shows. Please tell your friends to check us out and make sure you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. Check us out online at bclionsdan.ca, on Facebook at facebook.com/bclionsdan.ca, and on Instagram at bclionsdan_podcast, and that's podcast, PAWDCAST. And of course, follow us on Twitter at bclionsdan and at mojokemp. Enjoy the games this weekend, everyone. Let's hope we're talking about the Lions in the Eastern Final next week. On behalf of Mojo Camp and myself, take care of yourselves, and as always, roar, you Lions, roar.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.